Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Agriculture Report and Science in the News, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome back. This is As It Is, a program that helps you learn and improve your American English. Listen carefully and read along with us. Today, we begin with the thoughts of the President of Lithuania. Her country was once under the domination of the Soviet Union. What she has to say about Russia's recent actions in the world will be of interest to you. Then, we will talk about the politics of choosing a national language. The situation in India is at the top of our list today. As It is coming to you from VOA. Now, here is part one. The presidents of Russia and Lithuania are both experts in the sport of karate. Some observers say the two leaders are equal, at least when they compete with words. In Lithuania, July is the season of song festivals, like this one in the capital, Vilnius. But right now, Lithuania is not experiencing much harmony with its eastern neighbor, Russia. In fact, President Dalia Grybauskaitė sees just the opposite.
Now we're seeing aggressive rhetoric, aggressive behavior, aggressive propaganda, and informational wars.
The Lithuanian leader warns that what she calls great Russian chauvinism is fueling rebellion in Ukraine. Pro-Russian rebels there want to separate from the rest of the country.
So the great Russian chauvinism, which is now increasingly in Russia, it's mainly very much depends on the elite who are trying to revive it. And this is very dangerous. So I'm not sure that it will be over after 5 years because it very much relates personally with President Putin.
Ms. Grybauskaitė recently won a second 5-year term as president. She was sworn in last weekend. Lithuania is the largest of the three Baltic countries. All three are members of the European Union and the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. President Grybauskaitė warns that Russia's interference in Ukraine this year marks a dangerous turn in Russia's relations with its neighbors.
It's very worrying, and it looks that it's not over, that the same methods are now used in East Ukraine. The same threats, at least not directly military yet, but informational, cyber, propaganda wars already. We are feeling ourselves, Baltic states, Poland, for example. The military exercises also we do have on our borders, Kaliningrad region.
Ukraine, the United States, and some European countries have accused Russia of permitting fighters and weapons to reach the pro-Russian rebels in Ukraine. Russian officials have denied the claim. President Vladimir Putin and other Russian officials defend the country's takeover of Crimea earlier this year. They say it followed a legal election in which Crimeans voted to join Russia. Like in eastern Ukraine, a large population of Russian speakers lives in the Baltic countries. President Grybauskaitė criticized the Russian government for acting against neighboring countries that have Russian speakers. She compared this policy to Germany's actions before World War II.
We're seeing that the methods which have been used in the 30s of last century starting to be introduced even now in 21st century.
In answer to Russia's recent actions, President Grybauskaitė said her country is increasing defense spending. Lithuania aims to reach NATO's target of 2% of gross domestic product for defense. Lithuania is also working to reduce its dependency on Russia for all its natural gas. President Grybauskaitė expects these actions will help guarantee her nation's independence, even with Russia's new strength in the region. Choosing an official national language can be difficult, at times even dangerous. This is especially true for countries that have many languages and a colonial past, like India, for example. In India, deciding whether to use English or Hindi includes issues of social standing, history, nationalism, and even geography. It is a socio-political geo-lingua debate. It is the politics of language. Ana Mateo explains.
The question of whether to use English or Hindi is filled with India's colonial history and class struggle. And India is again debating the issue. New government leadership is moving toward making Hindi the official language of government communications. Prime Minister Narendra Modi prefers to use Hindi. Since taking office, Mr. Modi uses mostly Hindi when speaking in Parliament and with Indian officials or foreign leaders. Neerja Chaudhary is an independent political analyst. She says Mr. Modi is the son of a poor tea seller. He has come through the ranks or worked his way up in life.
But Mr. Modi, he is representing a different India. He's also come through the ranks. You know, his humble beginning, then he's made his way up.
No one questions the Prime Minister's personal language choice. However, many criticize his plan to make English second to Hindi when it comes to the working language of government. Hindi is widely spoken in the North. The North is also the power center of the ruling Bharatiya Janata Party. The southern and eastern states in India have always chosen among local languages, or English. About 50 years ago, efforts to make Hindi the country's only official language caused violent riots in the South. Perhaps wanting to avoid repeating that mistake, Prime Minister Modi showed that he has no problem with the English language. After watching the launch of a satellite in the southern Andhra Pradesh state, Mr. Modi surprised many by making his first speech in English since becoming Prime Minister.
My congratulations to our brilliant space scientists and the Department of Space for yet another successful launch of the Polar Satellite.
Some political observers say that was an intelligent move to calm the South, where many of the scientists call home. But officials in New Delhi continue to be under pressure to use Hindi, and many are clearly unhappy about that. India's upper middle class includes many senior, or top, government officials. They grew up mostly speaking English in their homes and in school. They can speak Hindi, but their written communication skills are often poor. So to keep in step with the Prime Minister, many are trying to quickly improve their Hindi. But critics say it is English that connects this diverse country. Neerja Chaudhary says it is a question of progress in today's widening world.
And why should we give up a natural advantage that we've had all these years?
The debate will most likely continue as Prime Minister Modi and the BJP try to establish a Hindu nationalist party with a growing middle class. I'm Ana Mateo.
We hope you learned something interesting today on As It Is. Please remember to join us again tomorrow. Learning English is a part of the Voice of America, and we are coming to you from Washington.
The Agriculture Report is next, followed by Science in the News. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Agriculture Report. The military government of Thailand is ending payments to rice farmers to support the price of their crop. The policy was put in place by the civilian government ousted recently by the military. Officials are investigating charges of corruption and the possible loss of billions of dollars. The military government says different measures are needed to increase agricultural development and support farmers. The rice support program was one of the most important policies of the government of ousted Prime Minister Yingluck Shinawat. It helped her party win the 2011 election. Under the policy, the government paid farmers 50% more than world market rice prices. The government said because Thailand was then the largest exporter of rice, it could use its power to increase the price of rice around the world. But problems affected the program, which cost more than $19 billion. India became the world's largest rice exporter. The Thai government angered people by refusing to release information about the payments, and the program failed. Thailand was not able to force an increase in the price of rice, and millions of tons of rice are now in storage buildings. Reports say 18 million tons of rice are being stored in Thailand. That is twice as many as normal levels. The payments to rice farmers ended last year. Hundreds of thousands of farmers were not paid. Reports said about 20 farmers killed themselves because of financial problems. Others protested, gathering on the streets of the capital, Bangkok, to demand payments. In March, the government tried to make money by selling rice on the world market at lower prices. David Daw is a senior economist at the Food and Agriculture Organization, a United Nations agency.
One of the ways that they were raising money is they realized that they were going to have to sell some of the huge stocks that they had. They just couldn't, you know, continue to borrow money and sit on all these stocks. And so they just started selling stocks.
There is some good news. The U.S. Agriculture Department predicts Thailand will be the world's biggest exporter of rice by next year. The department says Thailand will export almost 10 million tons. That is the largest amount since the country exported 10.6 million tons in 2011. And that's the Agriculture Report from VOA Learning English. For more agriculture stories, go to our website, learningenglish.voanews.com. I'm Christopher Cruz. Thank you.
From VOA Learning English, this is Science in the News. I'm Anna Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Today on the program, we tell about problems facing lions in West Africa. Wildlife experts say the big cats are being pushed out of their natural environments. We also tell about a life-size model of the final resting place for Egypt's boy king.
Some experts say as many as 40,000 lions once lived in West Africa. But a recent wildlife study estimates that only 400 of the big cats remain. The lions have been pushed out of their homelands. Today, they are fighting for survival in just 4 protected parks in the area.
Like many African countries, Senegal has attempted to balance environmental concerns with development. Today, Niokolo Koba National Park is the last place in Senegal where some of Africa's most famous animals live in freedom. The 9,130 square kilometers of parkland are home to lions and other wildlife. But a busy road runs through the middle.
Colonel Usman Khan is the chief conservation officer for the park. He says all the animals living there are important, but the lion is central. He calls it a symbol or sign of the country. The colonel notes that Senegalese people sing about it in their national anthem, and the national football team is called the Lions. But Senegal is threatened with losing its lion population. Colonel Khan estimates that there are about 100 of the animals left in Niokolo Koba. But the International Conservation Group for Wild Cats, Panthera, says that is old information. It says there are only 16 lions left.
Phil Henschel works for the group. He is heading a study called the Lion Program Survey.
What is really telling as well is when I conducted the survey with 5 National Park Service staff in 2011, none of them had ever seen a lion in their lives. I mean, one of them had worked in the park for 10 years. He had never, ever laid eyes on a lion. So people are realizing how rare these animals are nowadays.
Senegalese officials are using suggestions from the Panthera study to help develop a plan to save the remaining lions. One of these suggestions is barring villagers from letting their cattle feed in protected areas. Those animals eat food needed by other wildlife in the park. That harms the wildlife that lions traditionally feed on. El Hadj Fadia is the chief in Diyun Yala, a village near the park. He says villagers do let their livestock eat in the open national park. But he says they do not want the lions to disappear. He says there is not enough protection and enforcement efforts for a park the size of Niokolo Koba. Dr. Henschel says Senegal spends little to protect and preserve the lions in Niokolo Koba. In fact, he says, Senegal spends about 1/10 of the amount spent in similar parks in Burkina Faso and Benin. He says those two countries are home to 90% of the remaining lions in West Africa.
I mean, those countries are seriously investing in lion conservation or protected area management in general, and it does pay off.
Their increased investment increases the number of visitors, which helps pay for conservation operations. Dr. Henschel says Senegal should do the same to prevent illegal activity in the park.
The trade for wild animal meat in Senegal has cut the numbers of other animals in the park that lions would normally eat. The population of animals like the buffalo and roan antelope has decreased by 95% over the past 20 years. Demba Fai is one of 150 rangers who guard the park.
Pas plus tard que le mois passé, on a arrêté presque 4 braconniers dans le parc.
He says the rangers arrested 4 poachers earlier this year. He says they are fighting hard to save the park. But he says there is not enough money to end illegal hunting.
The tomb of Egypt's King Tutankhamun was lost to the world for thousands of years. Then in 1922, a team led by British archaeologist Howard Carter discovered the tomb and opened it. But in the years since then, the king's ancient burial place has suffered serious damage.
To rescue the tomb from further harm, workers in Egypt have created a full-size replica, an exact copy of it. The replica was opened to visitors recently. The real tomb will remain open, at least for now, but archaeologists hope that the replica will lead some people to visit the copied tomb instead of the real one. They hope less traffic to the actual tomb will reduce damage.
Tutankhamun, Tut for short, was arguably the world's most famous ruler. He is often called the Boy King. Scientists say Tut was born more than 3,300 years ago. He ruled from childhood and was thought to be about 19 years old when he died. He was buried among other members of ruling families in the Valley of the Kings. The area stretches along the Nile River near Luxor.
The replica of Tutankhamun's tomb is so like the real tomb that some archaeologists call it unbelievable. Laser instruments and printing equipment covered the replica's walls with the colors and texture of the real murals. Over time, the ancient walls suffered damage from moisture in the air. The ancient tomb was unable to stay cool and dry because of all the visitors. Temperature changes made pieces of the paint fall off. Cracks in the walls got bigger. Work began on the replica in 2009, but political insecurity and unrest slowed the project. The number of foreign tourists visiting Egypt has dropped in recent years. The amount of money earned from tourism also is lower.
Before the fall of President Hosni Mubarak, Zahi Hawass was the best-known archaeologist in Egypt. Several American and international researchers say he influenced many tourists to visit Egypt's ancient places. Zahi Hawass was known for his energy and ability to make difficult information available to non-students of archaeology. He often appeared on television. He gave public talks and wrote books. He organized a traveling exhibit called Tutankhamun and the Golden Age of the Pharaohs. The show helped raise more than $100 million for Egypt.
Zahi Hawass wore a hat similar to that of the movie character Indiana Jones. He also had an online fan club. But some people thought of him as being too close to the Mubarak government, which he denies. Some called him the Mubarak of archaeology. His critics included many other archaeologists and students of the science.
This Science in the News was produced by Christopher Cruz I'm Ana Mateo.
And I'm Christopher Cruz. Join us next week for more news about science here on The Voice of America.